accession number 27460, reel 12.
Mr. Wilkes, reel 12. We've got you on the ship going abroad.
Yes, the Otranto.
And you were suffering from seasickness. So what happened to you then?
Well, there was one evening I was hanging over the deck rail, being sick as per usual and making the worst of it, or the best of it, whatever you could. And there was a man from another regiment who was in a similar situation, and we got into conversation about various things. I didn't know who he was. I'd never seen him before or anything, but, you know, with 5,500 troops on board, you know, you were just wanting a lot. Anyway, we discussed the what might happen if someone went overboard, because the sea was so rough, I thought that there was a possibility of someone being swept overboard. And we were saying, or I was saying, it'll be hard luck if you got swept over where we were standing, because you'd probably be drawn into the propeller tubes and made mincemeat of. And I said, but if you were fortunate to survive, I said, there's little hope of you being picked up, because unless the stern escort was aware of you and could pick you up, that was the only hope you had. So that was all the sort of conversation that went. But strange enough, and it, in spite of all those men on that ship, someone during the course of the next day managed to point the finger at me. I was the last person that had seen this man alive, apparently, and he was never seen again. I was questioned at length, but I couldn't help anyone.
So he obviously disappeared overboard, presumably. Well, he must have done, obviously.
I wondered if he'd taken his own life. I was very worried in case he had.
There must have been people on board who just did not want to be there. I
mean, oh, yes.
Under any circumstances.
That's right.
So conditions below decks, what were they like? Because you're pretty crowded.
Pretty appalling as well. You were glad to get upon the open deck on a morning to get some fresh air. And for all it was bitter cold, we had 5 days where you could hardly see the rest of the convoy. But after 5 days, it was the Friday, when things began to improve, the ship didn't roll as much, and we were told that the crew would be rigging awnings on the open decks for us. So that was something good.
Have you any idea what route you followed on leaving Glasgow?
We went right out into the North Atlantic, down through the Bay of Biscay, and it was at that point somewhere where the convoy split up, and the aircraft carrier, the SS Aquitania, and a few other ships went off to Gibraltar, and we then carried on down in beautiful conditions. Then it was like a luxury cruise by comparison, down to Freetown.
Can we go through a typical day on board the vessel?
Yes.
You got up, I think you said 6 o'clock.
6 o'clock.
And then at 6:15 you had your roll call, which you have mentioned.
That's right. Half an hour PT on the very top deck. Then we came down. We had to clear away our hammocks and clear up the mess deck and get washed and shaved, and water was a problem. We didn't have much drink. We could fill our water bottles every day with fresh water, and for a short while each evening you got fresh water to wash your face and get a shave. Apart from that, you had to use this salt water soap, and you could shower. That was all right. That.
But that a seawater shower, not a fresh
water. Oh, seawater, yes. Seawater. And
so you cleaned up and dressed. What yes. Happened to you the first thing?
Well,
was it boat drill? Was that
yes, I think it was 10 o'clock we had to go for boat stations.
What did that entail?
being in line on the deck in your position with your life jackets on, and your officer or sergeant major would come and just give it a bump to make sure you had it properly tied and not just hung it on. And that was that. And you stayed there till the captain had finished his rounds. And it was when he was on his rounds, if he saw anything untoward, you didn't move till all that had been put right.
They're pretty strict discipline.
Very strict.
So, if all being well, you passed that in effect, and your boat drill's over. What would you do next?
Yes. Well, odd days, the canteen opened, and you were able to buy tins of fruit that had been loaded in South Africa. You know, these big tins of pears and peaches and things. And what we'd do, three or four of us would buy, would get a tin between us, and then someone else would buy it the next time, and that helped. Now, I didn't smoke, so the others got cigarettes, but I didn't bother.
So this would be fruit that you'd never seen since the war started.
That's right, yes.
Well, that part of the journey was obviously pleasant for you.
It was nice if you could get them, but sometimes the canteen closed again before you got served. And chocolate was another thing we used to sometimes get.
And was there a wet canteen where you could get...
Oh, no.
There was nothing like that
on
board.
No way.
So you've got a whole day to go to fill in effect. So you've had your boat drill, the canteen may have opened. How did you fill the rest of the time?
Yes, right. Well, I'll just jump to the lunchtime. I think it was 12 o'clock till 1 o'clock. A personal friend of mine, he had a dance band in Scotland, and he was a beautiful accordionist. And he used to entertain us over the ship's tannoy for 1 hour every day. And that was... people used to wait for him to play. He also... we had a couple of concerts on the ship while we were going abroad, and he would accompany the artists on that. On a Sunday morning when we had church parade, he was there, and if you turned your back, you would have thought you were listening to a church organ.
What was his name?
Jack Pillins. Super fellow. And... I stayed... They had an hotel at Kirkcaldy, and I stayed at his hotel, but he's dead now, both him and his wife. He went to Ensor after we got to India.
So you have your little bit of entertainment there.
Yes. Now, apart from that, we had tombola, housey-housey, as they used to call it in those days, during the day, and there was a chap from the 9th Gordons that was running the housey-housey on the stern of the ship. And he had so many helpers, whom he paid. And after lights out at night, he used to set up another business in the toilets, the downstairs, you know, wherever the toilets were, where there was night lighting. And they used to have Crown and Anchor running. So that was how that went.
And that was against the rules, wasn't it?
It was, yes.
Against regulations.
So that's why he had to have people out watching for him. But just as a matter of interest, when that man walked off the ship in Bombay, he, after having paid all his friends and paid the winners, he had £1,400 to walk off that ship with. So he'd done very well. And so...
So lunchtime or dinner time, what... I think you said you were on like a four-day changeover menu kind of thing.
That's right.
And you mentioned some of the things you would get. What other food were you giving? A mixture of the good and the bad, I think you said.
Yes. Well, some days you got a couple of slices of corned beef and a slice of orange, or an orange. Sometimes you got some boiled potatoes and... some meat or some breakfast invariably was a bit of fish or a bit of bacon, sausage, or I can't remember ever getting an egg. And we might have had some of that dried egg, scrambled egg sort of thing, but that would be it.
Afternoon, how was that filled in?
Well, that was... Well, I used to get books from the library and just lie there reading, because I never played housey-housey, and I just did that. Wrote a letter or added bits to a letter, and so the time went by.
Well, presumably the mail that you did write and prepare to send off wouldn't go until you got to the next port.
That's right. And so we eventually arrived at Freetown.
Before we go to Freetown, you come to your tea meal, or what would they give you there on board ship?
Well, you bread and jam, bread and cheese, that sort of thing.
Which is the same as you had on land.
That's
and
right.
The evenings, how were they filled in?
Well, once again, reading. I suppose I've turned really lazy.
It must have been quite boring over a long period of time.
Yes. I know I used to lie on the deck of the ship many a time, just watch the mast just moving. You could hardly see it just moving, you know, just a little bit each way, just rolling nice and steady. And looking out over the convoy, all keeping station, changing course. Now, our ship was giving the signals to change course. Our captain was the commodore of the convoy. Of the merchant convoy.
Were they giving you descriptions of the voyage, saying where you were now and how far you'd travelled?
Every day there was a sort of lottery, used to a gamble, how far you'd travelled, and they used to give you the exact mileage when it was at the right time.
Now, you'd moved out of the Atlantic area, as you were saying, and you're going down the west coast of Africa.
Yes.
Right? Now, the climate is changing.
Oh, it was tropical down there.
And you would be now into, what, your tropical kit?
Well, we didn't wear it. All we wore was our PT shorts and a cotton vest all the time, and our plimsolls.
Had you been warned about, as some men must have suffered, or been dangerous, suffering...
Sunstroke. Yes. And we did actually have one man. Mind you, he was pitifully thin. He was a clerk. And he was taken off the ship at Durban. The sunburn had burnt him to the bone. He was in a terrible state. But I'll mention that later, because...
Right. Presumably they warned you about it, what you should be wearing.
And what you should do, not to... You see, you were supposed to stay under the awnings.
Was it looked upon as an offence to catch sunstroke?
Anything that you did to hazard your health was an offence.
The crew itself, did you see much of them and get involved with them at all?
Not a lot. There was one chap I became quite friendly with, one of the crew, and he was particularly decent, because I bought some things in off the ship's shop, some things for my wife, and then I bought some things in Durban, and I was going to send it home, and he said, look... He was an Irish chap. He said, I'll take it for you and post it for you, and he did.
Was it crewed entirely by British people there? Or did you have any native crews?
Well, I didn't see any.
And you mentioned, of course, that the captain was a pretty strict gentleman. Was there an OC troops on board as well?
Well, there would be.
But you didn't get involved?
No.
What about boxing and sporting games? You mentioned PT, but was there any boxing evenings?
No, but we had a bit of tug-of-war. There was one or two tug-of-war events.
Crossing the line, would that be before you got to Freetown?
Yes.
That was usually quite a thing made of that. Do you recall crossing the line?
Well, all I know is that if it had been peacetime, there would have been a swimming bath rigged up. But, of course, we were too crowded for that. That was that.
So you didn't have a crossing the line ceremony?
No.
Well, what are your memories of Freetown?
Well, we didn't go into Freetown itself. We were moored about a mile or so offshore, out of range of the mosquitoes. We stayed there for a week.
Did you have the... Is it bum boys, they call, coming out in
the
boats?
Oh, yes. Yes, coming round and shouting for Glasgow pennies.
And what are those?
Well, if you threw them a penny, it was... I think they thought we were all from Glasgow or something like that. I don't know.
And evidently they were good swimmers and divers for these objects you were throwing to them. They dived into the water.
Oh yes, dived down and got it, and they showed you it when they came up with it.
Were any of them trying to sell things to you from their boats?
I think they possibly were, but I don't think we got anything on board. Now, whilst we were anchored in Freetown, one of our escorts, HMS Nelson, was there, and one of the men in my regiment had a brother on the Nelson, and they very kindly brought him over to spend a day on our ship with my men. During the week that we were waiting in Freetown, we were now joined by the Rodney and quite a few heavy escort vessels. We had been told, but how true it was, we don't know, we'd no evidence, that Italian subs had chased us into Freetown. But as far as I know, there'd been no attacks. We'd got through unscathed. Now then, we were there for a week, and we would sail on the 20th of June.
You were never allowed ashore?
No. The reason I'm mentioning the 20th of June is because it just happened to be that my wife's sister was being married that day, so the date clicked. And we sailed out of Freetown that day, and then a peculiar thing happened during the night. Either our ship gave the signal that to alter course and didn't, or the Nelson didn't respond. But the Nelson came within 12 feet of ramming us amidships. It was all pandemonium on board. This happened round about midnight. Strange enough, many years later, I think it was about 1974, my wife and I and her sister, who'd been married that day, and her husband, we were out to a little pub at Old Cornsey. And we went into the lounge, and there was a couple of men came in that had seen us come in, and one man had been the husband of a friend of my wife's. He was now a widower. But the other man was introduced as a commodore. I couldn't, you know, I thought, I've seen you before. And so I asked him which line he sailed with, and apparently he was with P&O then, but he did know the Otranto. He'd been the captain of the ship in 1942 that took us abroad. So I said to him, in the presence of all the others, I said, can you remember the night of the 20th of May? 20th of June, sorry. 1942. He said, tell me. And then I started to tell him, and he said, oh, he says, the Nelson came within a few feet of ramming us. My story had been authenticated.
Did you have any duties to perform on the ship?
Yes. We had a sort of guard on our own mess deck, and everyone had to take that turn in. I was like guard commander on one or two occasions.
What were you guarding?
Nothing. just making sure no one came down pinching equipment off us from any other lot.
Was there much stealing on board? Haven't troops packed together so tightly?
Well, possibly there was.
Not in your experience?
Not in my experience, no.
We were talking about the conditions, and you touched upon the toilets from a gambling point of view. With so many men using so few facilities, it must have got a pretty rough at times, I would assume.
It did.
Particularly in the heat of the as it got hotter.
Yes. I know one day I was in charge of a party cleaning weapons down in the armoury, which was at a propeller shaft level. By God, you could have been in where it's hot, Hades.
Was the ship air-conditioned for the climate?
No.
So the heat must have gone round. Were you allowed up on deck at night to sleep on the decks?
Some of them did, yes. The night where we nearly had the mishap, one of the men that was sleeping on the open deck, he was in a hammock on the open deck, and he was thrown over the side, but came to as he was going over. And the people that told me about it, they said he was just hanging down the side of the ship, didn't know what had happened. He had the rail underneath his armpits. What's happened? What's going on?
But they did allow you up on deck to sleep at night.
Oh, yes.
In the hot climate.
And you had to be up early because the crew came along with the hoses first thing in the morning.
So you're going down the west coast of Africa now and you're approaching the South Africa.
Yes, and we're going down there. And the convoy eventually would split into three. One part turned towards Cape Town. The heavy escort turned back. And we... in our group of ships would round the Cape to Durban.
Now, Durban, what were your first impressions of Durban as you sailed in?
Well, before we got to Durban, we were having a bit of heavy sea again, but I wasn't seasick anymore, and I haven't been ever since. A lot of them were, but that was it. But this particular night, as we were rounding the Cape, we were listening to the 9 o'clock British news over the tannoy, and Mr. Churchill was announcing, every day and every night, our ships are rounding the Cape of Good Hope with men and supplies badly needed. And one wag amongst our lot says, bloody hell, he says, that's Davy Jones' locker for us now. So we didn't have any worries. We got round and we went into Durban. Now then, you've heard about the lady in white. I didn't actually see her myself. There was so much noise and cheering and clapping and one thing and another. She was further up, but some that were in the... I was on the stern end of the ship, and those on the bows, they heard her. And
she's the lady that was singing as the ships
yes,
came in.
Yes, that's right. And people had these barrows full of oranges, and these lovely big juicy oranges. They were hurling them up, and as many hit the side, and... But, you know, we felt what a waste. So we saw all this happening. And then, as it got on to evening, so many of us were told that we could go ashore. And so we went over, and I... Before leaving this country, I had an address with me in Durban from someone who'd been out on an earlier ship. And we went, there were three of us, went to visit these people. Very nice, and they made us very welcome, and we must go back the next night, and this sort of thing. Well, the following day we had to get off the ship, and our billet was the stand in the football pavilion. And we just had to sleep on these narrow seats, the forms, timber thing. We just had to sleep on those.
Why did they send you all off? Was it to clean it up?
I think to give the ship a break. And anyway, we were supposed to be off for about 4 nights, and I think it was just 3 nights altogether.
Now, we had people coming to take you to their homes and...
We went to these...
You went to the same
Actually, the next night, my two that had been with me couldn't go, but I went on my own. And then they were coming, folk were coming for us the next afternoon to take us out. And we got everything arranged, and the next we knew we had to go back on the ship, so we couldn't go out. And so I managed to ring them up and tell them what was happening. And they said, well... Whatever can come along, you'll be welcome.
So was Durban a more British area than a Dutch area?
Very British, very British.
So the welcome was quite warm.
Yes. And the man that we were stopping, being hosted by, he was in the equivalent to the Home Guard. And his duties in the Home Guard there, he was in the wholesale butchery business, and he was supplying meat to the 8th Army. So that was his contribution.
Did you see anything of apartheid or what was became known to be apartheid in the treatment of the coloured people?
No, we didn't see anything like that. All was very good. Even the coloured people were looking at us as we marched from the football field or to the football field. You know, they watched us. Now then, when we went back onto the ship... the ship must have been detailed to sail a bit earlier than we'd intended, because it was along the dockside, and there were these truckloads of sheep's carcasses that they were loading And it was surprising where it was all disappearing down into the hold of the ship. And it was, they were still virtually loading at the time the ship cast off. And then we went and we thought we were heading for Sumatra, but we weren't. We finished up in Bombay.
Where you crossed the Red Sea. And was that a good crossing? Not the Red Sea, sorry, the Indian Ocean.
The Indian Ocean, yes.
Was that a good crossing?
Yes. That was a good crossing.
And the same routine day by day?
Oh, yes. Monotonous. We were all but 9 weeks on the ship.
Is it true that you can, you know, you're approaching Bombay from a distance, that there's...
Well, you see the kite hawks, they come out to meet you. And some of the old soldiers, the first ones said, look, Bombay, that's where we're going.
And what are your memories of arriving in Bombay?
It was a stinking place. We, now, on arrival in Bombay, I was told that if I wanted to go ashore, I could go ashore, but I had to be back by 10 o'clock because I was in charge of an unloading party to see that the regimental stores and things came ashore properly. So three of us went off for a meal, and we saw this place advertising English ham and eggs. It was that plastic type of cooked ham and poached eggs. I was really fancying a real greasy fry-up.
And what was your impressions of the Indian people, this first impression?
Terribly poor. I mean, you couldn't visualise the poverty in which they were living. But we were warned not to give in to our better nature and start giving money out, or else we'd never get back to the ship, we'd be besieged.
Had you had lectures as you approached India about the
no.
Not only the climate, but the way of life and what you should be protecting yourself
they
against?
Gave us some booklets and things that we read and that. But you know, the old soldiers were the ones that kept you on, you know, they knew.
Did you get any VD protection films on that this time or in the army? Had you had any?
Yes, they had told us about it and what to do and what not to do. But, you know, it's as far as a lot of us were concerned, we weren't going to be interested in the least. I intended to go home the way I'd come out.
So your duty was to return the ship and get the stores off?
That's right. And I did. It was interesting watching, but the stuff had practically all come off when I got back. For all I was on time, they must have been ahead of their unloading, and there was not much to come off when I went down into the hold.
And presumably this would be native labour.
Oh, yes, yes. And there was a foreman there, and he had a little boy there who was given the job of looking after his coat. He knew it wouldn't be there very long if he didn't.